I'm Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we are talking about Shohei Ohtani. Ever heard of him? He hit a home run in a spring training game. Of course, we're going to talk about that, as well as catching up on some of the other moves we missed while we were away. Brandon Woodruff back to the Brewers, Jorge Soler's on the Giants, and so is Pablo Sandoval for some reason, as well as a handful of other moves and extensions. Bobby Witt Jr. with Kansas City forever, as well as Jose Altuve with Houston.
And because it is a baseball podcast episode in the year 2024, we will talk about uniforms again. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world thinking about Chris Coughlin on leap day. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we're hopping into March.
Oh my gosh, what a great introduction, Chris Coughlin. He had a career, but he will always be defined by that leap of faith at home plate. And I'm glad you reminded me that it is indeed a leap year.
Do you know who he jumped over?
Who did he jump over? I'm trying to picture it. Was it against, it was with the Cubs and it was against the Cardinals?
He was on the Blue Jays and he jumped over Yadier Molina, who we will get to
a little bit later. I was going
to
say Yadier Molina, but I think I'm picturing him doing it with the Cubs. So I sort of remembered that. But I'm happy to be talking to you on this fine Wednesday morning, Jake. If I am a little, if I you know, stumble on some facts today, I would like a slight excuse, a little bit of a pass. I was up at 4 a.m. Sitting in my basement due to a tornado warning. So it's been an interesting evening here in the Midwest, but I am awake. I am excited. I got a few extra minutes in the middle of the night to think about how Tim Anderson fits with the Marlins. And we are going to get into that, as well as so many other moves that we missed. I know we focused on Bellinger, but this is the real catch-up episode. We're going to be efficient. We are going to talk about the Nationals throwing ball four, sometimes hard, sometimes not, and so much more. But of course, I believe we are going to start with this designated hitter on the Dodgers. Is that true?
Yeah, we'll talk about Shohei Ohtani in a second. I just want to say thank you to everybody who welcomed us back to the podcasting world. Like we said on our last show, we're amped to be back, amped to be with Yahoo. You can now watch us on video, and I know a lot of people did. The response has been really heartwarming, and it's good to be back.
Yes, no, it is very cool to, again, I think over time, eventually, if we're doing well, we will probably end up reaching some people on YouTube that we don't necessarily intend to. The YouTube comments section is always a fun place, but it has been incredibly kind and welcoming so far. And I am so glad that our show's on YouTube. It's fun for us to go back and watch some of it and be like, hey, how did that sound / look? And so I'm excited to be here.
Being in two places at once, Shohei Ohtani.
More than two places. Ohtani's doing one thing right now. I don't even remember that this guy pitches. We are going to begin, of course, with him before we get into the moves and extensions that we missed in our first episode back. Jake, you're not going to believe this, but the guy who led the American League in home runs last year has not forgotten how to hit home runs. I saw it with my own two eyes in live batting practice when I was in Arizona. It was actually a very, very similar sequence where he stood in the box for his first at-bat and just didn't swing and was kind of processing the information. And then he hit a ground ball. Again, he grounded to a double play in a second at-bat. And then he was like, all right, I have seen all I need to see. It is now time for me to deposit a baseball over the fence. He takes a fastball. He hits it about as high. I wish we had StatCast for all spring training for a million reasons, but I would have loved to know what the launch angle was on this opposite field blast off of Dominic Leone. And it was like, yep, of course he did. And then he immediately left, because that's what you do in spring training when you're a good player and you've played your five innings, you leave. It's one of the best and worst parts about spring training.
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. It reminds me of when an NFL player will like score a touchdown to end a half and just keep running into the tunnel. That's what you should do. Ohtani homers, rounds the bases, jogs into the dugout, picks up his bag and runs into the clubhouse. And that's his day. One quick last thing about Ohtani. A year ago, Bryce Harper's miraculous recovery from Tommy John was a huge storyline, and it was incredible. Okay. I believe Bryce got the surgery in early, mid November.
Yeah.
If
like
I
a
remember
month later
correctly.
Than Ohtani.
But a month later than Ohtani. Bryce came back in May, right? Mm-hmm. Came back in May and wasn't really himself for the first couple months of the year. Now, I know it's a little bit different because they're different people and everybody is different. Everybody is different. However, Ohtani being at this point in the timeline looking like himself already is very notable. No, because is he going to out Bryce Bryce?
Probably. Yeah. Respectfully. Now, of course, you could say, well, we don't actually know if he really did get Tommy John surgery. He got his mystery elbow surgery that we're still wondering what it was. But elbow surgery is elbow surgery. And by the way, the other thing that does not seem to be relevant at this point is at some point he's going to have to start preparing to pitch again. That does not seem to be really at all his focus right now, which is understandable. But yeah, I mean, that kind of opposite field power, of course, even he said afterwards, he's like, yeah, I thought I hit it too high. Like, I didn't think this was a real home run. Arizona, you know, the ball's going to fly there. That's fine. But it's still, it is still a reminder that he is, he's a showman, man. The guy knows how to deliver. And for that, we are thankful. I know people are going to get exhausted and sick of it. I know there's Giants fans that want to block the @MLB account for tweeting every time Ohtani sneezes. I get it. But look, it's not his fault. This guy is that freaking good and that freaking cool and that freaking important to our sport. And because of that, I don't mind. I don't mind seeing it as much Ohtani stuff as possible.
I think it's easy and understandable to be cynical until he swings. And then when he swings, that should go out the window. Appreciate the wonder.
I will say, though, quickly, before we move on to another Dodgers topic and start hitting these moves, my biggest takeaway from that game was Garrett Crochet is throwing 100 miles an hour again. And I know the White Sox, you know, they posted their clip of him striking out and being like, you know, a story in three parts. Boom, Crochet strikes out Ohtani. What a beast. But like, no, seriously, if Garrett Crochet is throwing 100 again, it doesn't mean the White Sox aren't going to finish in last, but that is someone I'm actually going to be excited to watch on the White Sox this year. So anyway, good for Garrett Crochet. All right, let's stick with the Dodgers, Jake, and let's start going through these moves. Again, so much happened. We're still not going to get to everything. Again, I don't think we're going to give our Phil Maton thoughts, but let's stick with the Dodgers, not just because we have to talk about Clayton Kershaw, but also because they made some moves even in the last couple days that I think are worthy of talking about. But let's start with Kershaw. Kershaw, we last saw him basically getting embarrassed on a postseason mound, somehow even by his standards to a degree that we have not seen. And you're going to roll your eyes because it's like, oh, that's unfair. The Kershaw playoff narrative is unfair. And that's true. And listen, Clayton Kershaw is one of the greatest pitchers of all time. And he defeated his demons. He won a World Series. He has nothing to prove. However, when you give up, what was it, six runs to the Diamondbacks at home, and the series is basically over before it begins, and people were wondering if you're healthy, that was not a good way to go out. And he entered the offseason as a free agent wondering, okay, was that it for Clayton Kershaw? And I think, understandably, when you know Clayton Kershaw, the competitor, the answer was a resounding no, even if that means rehabbing shoulder surgery.
The first surgery, at least publicly, that he's had, which is notable when you're at his age and you've played baseball for that long. As is the case every winter, Clayton Kershaw was presented with three options. Retire, Dodgers, Rangers. He's from Texas. That's been a rumor forever. And he opted yet again to go with Dodgers. Essentially, it is a two-year deal for $10 million. What's interesting now is the Dodgers have leaned on Clayton Kershaw for so long. And this will be the first time, the first season, where they're not going to have to do that. Anything he gives them feels like bonus, feels like icing on the cake. They have built their roster, built their pitching staff to thrive and survive without Clayton Kershaw. I will be very interested to see how that impacts him when he gets back from injury at some point, I would say, in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, and I think the other thing just to remember is I trust that he is, of course, and the Dodgers are going to give him every opportunity. Shoulder surgery at this age, not that he's as old as he actually, in terms of the mileage on his arm, is much more significant than his actual age. But shoulder surgery is no joke. So we don't really know exactly how he is going to respond to this. But I know he's going to try. And I also just know that, to your point, though, like, if this Dodgers rotation is healthy when he comes back, it is going to be really interesting to see how they work him back in. Now, I don't think they're going to have any problems telling Emmett Sheehan, sorry, bud, you're throwing the fifth and sixth now. But remember, Walker Buehler is still not even this projected rotation right now, right? If you look at it right now, it's Yamamoto, Glasnow, Bobby Miller, James Paxton. That's another one who, in some ways, it's built to not have Kershaw. In other ways, it's built to have Kershaw come back when the other guys are struggling. So in that respect, it definitely makes sense. But hey, yeah,
if you pen Kershaw, maybe that fastball goes up to 94 again. You know, who maybe knows? Clayton could come back with a changeup that we've been waiting
that's
for.
That's the real question. Is does he come back? You know, it's just a completely different pitcher. That would really be something to behold. But Kershaw is obviously not going to impact the Dodgers at the beginning of the season. They did make one move over the last couple of days that was kind of unintentionally funny. And this genre of move, I think, is something I've certainly become familiar with as a Mariners fan because Jerry DePoto does this all the time. But this was a little bit different. The trading a guy away before he actually even plays for you in the regular season. Now, the Mariners have done this during the offseason where they acquire someone and trade them before anyone reports the camp. However, that was not the case for one Manuel Margot.
Or reports the trade. Like, it feels like very often in the circumstance where a player is traded and then immediately traded to another team, it all happens within the span of 24 hours or at least 2 weeks, right? Yes. Marco Gonzalez, this offseason, was traded from the Mariners to the Braves, and it became obvious pretty quickly that that's not where he was going to pitch this year, right? And then he was traded to the Pirates. Mm-hmm. For Manny Margot, who was dealt to the Dodgers in the Tyler Glasnow deal, he felt like a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah,
for the Dodgers.
He made sense. He made a lot of sense. I mean, again, of course, the Rays were trying to move off of the salary, and you know, he was making a decent chunk of money for someone who is essentially a platoon outfielder, but a platoon outfielder that is still a damn good defender and one that fits great next to Jason Hayward.
And so, hits lefties well.
Okay, he hits lefties well. He's, again, it made sense, the outfield. Even you could see him also, you know, platooning with Outman if Outman was struggling, you know, with left-handed pitching. So he made plenty of sense. So no one, when he, you know, shows up at Dodgers camp and I saw him there and he's meshing and he's hanging out with Teoscar Hernandez, it's like, okay, Manny Margot's going to be in the Dodgers. Like, I know it's not right. The biggest move of their winter, but it makes plenty of sense.
And then, disaster.
Yeah. And then really what ended up happening was there was another team that needed Manny Margot a lot more than the Los Angeles Dodgers. And that turned out to be the Minnesota Twins, who I believe on the same day that Byron Buxton returned to play center field for them for the first time in like 2 years, they traded for Manny Margot as a sign of saying, hey, not only do we need some more right-handed outfield mix because they have so many left-handed outfielders, we also probably need a little bit of insurance for Buxton. Of course, they had Michael A. Taylor, who, by the way, is still a free agent and someone who I think would help a lot of teams. But Manny Margot, they decide to bring him in. It seems like the Dodgers paid down the salary. They trade away Noah Miller, an infield prospect that they had that they drafted very highly recently. Dodgers, you know, again, making a deal where they're kind of clearing off their 40-man for a move we'll talk about in a second. They're adding at the low levels of their system in a shortstop like Noah Miller, good defender. We'll see if he can hit. And Manny Margot goes to the Twins, which for Margot logistically is a tough bounce.
Yeah, having to go from Arizona to Florida in the middle of spring training, that's a real schlep, even though I don't think Manny Margot knows the word schlep. Hopefully someone can.
Hey, he's more likely to now. I mean, he did spend a lot of time in Florida, but in terms of where the word schlep is being thrown around, I think it's probably more likely in Florida than in Southern California, but I could be wrong about that.
Jordan, what will you remember most from the Manny Margot Dodgers era?
Well,
what's going to stick with you?
Yeah, I'm really glad you documented it. I'm glad you put out the highlight reel. I think that it was a fitting tribute, one that I don't even think the Dodgers are going to do, right? I don't know if the Twins are playing at Dodger Stadium this year. You know, will he get a welcome back?
Yeah.
I doubt it. Like, probably not. Well,
of the six spring training plate appearances he had, did you have a favorite?
No. For me, it'll be when I was in the Dodgers clubhouse last week, and it was him and Teoscar and Nelson Cruz, who is randomly a special assistant for the Dodgers right now, all just chopping it up. Just, you know, three Dominican outfielders having a damn good time. Little did Manny know he would be off to Fort Myers in the near future. By the way, I wanted to shout out the Twins social team because they posted like a specific Manny Margot is here post with like a picture of him smiling, walking in. I love that because at the very least he deserves for all of his trouble, he does deserve like a hearty welcome. And of course the Twins are going to do that. So I like now, to see that for him.
Manny Margot's biggest issue as it relates to the Dodgers, I think, is that he's not Kike Hernandez. And Kike Hernandez is and has always been and will likely continue to be Kike Hernandez. And that helps him be on the Dodgers. The Dodgers signed Kike Hernandez to backfill Manny Margot's job. I don't feel like talking about it. He's going to be fine. He's going to play a lot of positions and he's going to make people laugh in the room. Simple as.
It's it's the same move, except he can also play infield. So, you know, I guess that makes him slightly less, but slightly more valuable on top of the fact that they all obviously know him and love him.
From the Dodgers to the Giants, let's head up the coast and talk about a deal that we missed when we were on our hiatus. San Francisco Giants, who have had one of the weirder off seasons in recent memory, one of the weirder last two off seasons in recent memories, they signed Jorge Soler for 3 years and $42 million. The Giants have missed out on Correa, sort of,
on
Judge, on purpose.
they could have forged through with that contract, and clearly that was not what they wanted to do.
Otani, they tried to trade for Giancarlo Stanton that one time. They didn't want to go there. The Giants have been looking for a slugger for a long time.
You know, they've tried for both sides of the ball, and this was one that, you know, Soler was still lingering out there. And someone that I just thought was undervalued. And obviously, San Francisco as a ballpark is not necessarily someone where everybody wants to come hit. But when you've got probably 70-grade power like Jorge Soler does, he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. I got it. Not an issue for me. I can come hit home runs in San Francisco.
Jordan, do you know the last San Francisco Giant with a 30-home-run season?
I do. Although now I'm wondering who the last right-handed hitter for the San Francisco Giants to hit 30 home runs. The answer is Barry Bonds, I believe, in his final season didn't he only hit 28 in 2007? So it was before that. It must have been 2004. Okay. So I would say that is probably one of the craziest team-related fun facts that we have still going. But it makes sense in some respects. But it is also like a kind of says a lot about how the Giants have acquired and developed hitters, you know, since Barry Bonds. 30 is, and by the way, like 30 in that park is a lot. And Soler, who of course had a career high 48 in 2019, but he had 36 in 2023. He's as good a bet as anybody, but it's not a guarantee that Jorge Soler is going to hit 30 home runs this year. And part of that is because while he has been very productive from a power standpoint, you know, when he's been healthy, you know, health has been an issue. And he's been streaky at times, but I love this guy. I mean, his career has been really interesting. When it kind of took a while for it to really get off the ground after those years in Chicago and even in Kansas City, you know, it took him a while to really find it. But he is a traditional slugger in every sense. It does seem like they see him as the DH. We're not going to see him have to roam around that Giant outfield, which is probably for the best. And he does add something to this Giants team that gets them a little bit closer to thinking, okay, maybe if a lot goes right, they can be a wild card team.
The lineup is undeniably better, just to be clear. Like, it is better. It's not outstanding, but with Soler in the middle of it, it definitely adds another component to it. The last right-handed hitter to hit 30 home runs for the Giants was 2002. Both Jeff Kent and Rich Aurelia did it that year. Marco Luciano, who is probably going to be the starting shortstop for the Giants this year, was 1 year old in 2002, the last year that somebody, a right-handed hitter, hit 30 home runs for them. I love Soler. I think he's really underrated. Whenever he's healthy, he bangs. Whenever he's hurt or battling through an injury, he's either not playing, duh, or less good. And so if he could stay on the field, I think he's awesome. Look at the numbers from 2016 Cubs, who have moved on to other pastures, and Soler's offensive numbers are right up there with everybody except for Kyle Schwarber, who's in a different level. He has more World Series rings than the rest of the Giants 40-man roster combined. The only other person with a ring on the roster is Luke Jackson, who was on the 2021 Braves with Jorge Soler. Speaking of, that home run he hit in Game 6 of the 2021 World Series, we were in the building for it. Unforgettable. That is an unforgettable baseball moment. Go watch that clip back. It is arguably the biggest undersell by John Smoltz ever. His call of that is, especially because, like, the critique of Smoltz would be that he's a Braves fan, right? No, opposite. Mm-hmm. Jorge Soler rules. I'm all in on him. I think he looks incredibly cool in uniform, and I can't wait to see him on the Giants. I like when the Giants sign big guys, too. Like, the Giants have Giants. Yeah. I think that's fun.
That's true. And to that point, first of all, I just want to quickly say the key to this whole Giants offense is still going to be what Jung Hoo Lee is. And I am a believer in him. I know there are Giants fans that are really excited about him. I believe in his long-term offensive ceiling, but as far as competing this year, it's going to be all about what he can actually produce out of the leadoff spot. But you mentioned there, Jake, you said, oh, only he has more World Series rings than everybody on the roster. But Jake Mintz, there's somebody who's there in Scottsdale, not on the roster, who has three World Series rings. And for some reason, that is Pablo Sandoval. And I do not know what prompted this, but I think we have to acknowledge it. He is in camp as a non-roster invitee. Farhan Zaidi joked that he signed him so that Sandoval would stop sending him workout videos to basically prove to him that I am ready to play baseball again. He's 37. He did not play baseball last year anywhere besides, I guess, in the last year he played in Dubai for 2 days. He was in the Mexican League in 2022. Remember, this is the guy who was, he was briefly, of course, with the Braves after the Giants when he had gone back to the Giants after the Red Sox disaster. He was traded for Eddie Rosario, another important moment in that 2021 Braves season. Which is bizarre, by the Braves to Cleveland for Eddie Rosario. So he's a weird part of that baseball history. But now he's just around camp. And this is the most blurred line I have ever seen between, respectfully, between an actual guy making a comeback and come out and hang out. Here's a former legend here for the vibes. I can't quite, like, this doesn't, like, if I'm Bob Melvin, I'm like, are we really serious about this? Like, respectfully to Pablo Sandoval, I just don't understand this. Like, tell me I'm wrong. Like, I just, it's very strange. Like, he was batting fifth in the spring training game the other day.
I think it might be like, oh, well, sure, Pablo, like, give it a go, guys. Like, and the Giants are just happy to have him around. What I'm gathering from this is that if I pepper general managers with workout videos of myself, I will get an invitation to spring training. I would say, you know, we're around baseball. I probably have like 7 or 8 GMs phone numbers. And this is a warning to all of them who listen to the pod. So none of them, now that I know how to get an invite to spring training, you're going to get videos of me at the local Planet Fitness, no free ads, doing my curls. Okay. Hey, and I expect an email back.
Hey, Blake Snell and Matt Chapman, Jordan Montgomery, apparently it's this easy. Scott Boris, I don't know what you're waiting for. Just send Farhan a video of Matt Chapman doing a couple push-ups and it's game over. You're getting that fourth or fifth year that you're looking for. So I don't know what the wait is.
I'll play for free. One Giants legend who is not in camp with the Giants because he's in camp elsewhere, Brandon Crawford. Brandon Crawford signed a 1-year, $2 million deal with the St. Louis Cardinals. It is the first time he has played for any team that is not the Giants. He looks weird as hell in a Cardinals uniform, weird as hell in another uniform. This move from like a logistical perspective, Mason Wynn is the Cardinal shortstop. He's young. He's raw. He has a lot of development left to do. They want Brandon Crawford to kind of be around him, help tutor him on the defensive side of things, and then spell Crawford a little, or spell Wynn whenever he needs a day off, so that they can focus on Tommy Edman, who played a lot of shortstop last year, only playing the outfield. That's fine. It makes sense. Crawford is only like, I think 2 years ago, he was coming off. So I guess 2021, he got MVP votes. Like, he was an incredible hitter. There is a chance he's not that player anymore. Whatever. My favorite thing about this is
it's 2 years of being a very bad hitter, but he's still a damn good shortstop. So can't take that away from him.
So my favorite part, though, is the quote he said. I think this was in a Derek Gould article. Quote, I've always liked the Cardinals organization from across the field. Yeah, I bet you do. Quote, they are one of a couple of teams I would come to spring training out here in Florida for. And that echoes my point that Florida, not ideal, and baseball players know it. They'd much rather be in Arizona.
But to that point, let's follow up on this.
Yeah.
Who are the others? Who do we think he would be willing to, like, I would guess, see, Yankees, I'm not sure, considering his facial and hair situation. Who
the Red probably Sox, the Braves. He smells the Braves. Everyone would be on the Braves if they could. The Red Sox, I don't know if he wants to live in Boston, but he just looks like he should be on the Red Sox. So that fits for me. And I think those are the only teams. Jordan, let's fly through a number of transactions here, and then we're going to take a quick break.
Let's just take turns.
I'm going to read the transactions.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll do it. I'll hit you with some rapid fire fuego.
Go.
I'm excited. All right, let's begin. Let's do the Brewers quickly. When you said a former Giants legend who's not with the Giants anymore, I thought you were going to say Gary Sanchez, or Jake Junis for that matter. Jake Junis, both of which signed with the Brewers, as well as Brandon Woodruff. Cool to see Brandon Woodruff kind of go back. Again, a guy who we know is not going to pitch this year after shoulder surgery. But as far as Brewers kind of still cultivating good vibes, especially after the Corbin Burns trade, keeping Woodruff in house, where of course he's comfortable, I think makes a lot of sense, even if he's not going to help them this year. Gary Sanchez, I love this because we know where catchers go to thrive. It's Milwaukee. I don't really see why they need him very much, so that part is a little bit strange. But I think Gary Sanchez is still like a totally fine catcher, and I saw some other teams that I think could have used him more. But if I'm Gary, I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll go hit there, get 200 plate appearances, and they can turn me into, you know, Johnny Bench defensively. Like, sounds good to me. And then Jake Junis is probably going to throw like 180 innings for them, so just mentally prepare yourself for that.
The Brewers turned William Contreras into an elite defender last year, and I expect them to help Gary get a little bit better. The Marlins signed Tim Anderson. Okay. I'm just happy that Tim Anderson found somewhere to play baseball. I think he's got something left in the tank. I don't know if that's the best place for him, considering the Marlins have been awful at developing or helping hitters get better. And I hope that he is good.
Yeah, I hope that he's good.
And relevant. Baseball's better when Tim Anderson is relevant.
100%. And it's their first major league free agent that they signed all offseason. He does fit for them. I imagine he's excited to have a shortstop job. We assumed maybe he was going to have to move to second base. But to me, I mean, this is going to be about Tim Anderson being healthy and figuring shit out on his own. You know, I hope the Marlins can help him. But as from a player development standpoint, I hope that he can make it happen. They also traded for Nick Gordon, which is interesting. I think he's someone, again, another bounce back candidate who was really good a couple years ago. If he's healthy, I think he can really fit in with Miami as well. The Tigers signed Gio Urshela. I think the Tigers are still a great landing spot for Matt Chapman, but maybe not as much anymore. The one thing I'll say about Gio Urshela, again, I just don't think this guy's very bad. I think he was hurt last year, and I think he can help them. So it's clearly also very much a bridge to Jace Young and, you know, Justin Henry Molloy, that next wave of third baseman. I like Gio Urshela. If he's healthy, I think he can help them. Rays sign Amed Rosario. Makes plenty of sense, although their infield is, even after losing Wander Franco, who will probably never play baseball again, they still have so many infielders that I'm trying to figure out how they're all going to fit, but I'm sure they will make it work. Although I will mention that the Junior Caminero home run, we're going to have to talk more about Junior Caminero as the season approaches. I just wanted to put that into the universe so that you can hold me accountable in case we don't talk about Junior Caminero.
That is my takeaway from the Amed Rosario signing, is that Junior Caminero, who is one of the top prospects in baseball, came up at the end of the year for them last year. It smells like he will begin the year in the minor leagues, and Rosario will take some of that playing time in the majors. The Red Sox signed Liam Hendricks, who I saw when I was at Red Sox camp and talked to. Liam Hendricks, obviously, unbelievable story. Had cancer, came back last year. His elbow blew out. He said the other day when I was there that he never really felt healthy, that pitchers are always pitching through stuff. Got Tommy John. He's going to be rehabbing up until, I think, his goal is the trade deadline, is what he said. He's looking to be ready by the trade deadline and is planning to be able to help the Red Sox this year. I believe there's a team option for him for next year. Philadelphia Phillies signed Spencer Turnbull, Whit Merrifield. This is just relevant because the Phillies didn't add any new faces to their clubhouse this winter, except for these two guys. The day I was there was Spencer Turnbull's first day. It was very funny. Everyone was introducing themselves to Spencer Turnbull because he was the only person that the writers could introduce themselves to because they knew everybody else already.
Can I do want your opinion on the Whit Merrifield fit here, because he's someone that I think, again, he's kind of a player that, because he is like, you know, first percentile exit velocity, and people just don't think he's as fun of a player to have. Like, how much playing time do you see him getting? Because he had some quotes being like, you know, I've done all these things. I've been an all-star. I've won batting titles. Like, I just want to win. Like, and I get that from him. But where does he kind of fit into the Phillies mix? Because to me, he's pretty clearly like a bench guy that isn't going to play that much.
He's not going to play that much. There is a possibility that Johan Rojas their center fielder who is with them in the playoffs starts the year in AAA to work on his hitting. And in that case, Brandon Marsh would move to center and Whit Merrifield would more or less be the everyday left fielder with Kyle Schwarber being the DH. That is one possibility. If they choose to have Rojas on the opening day roster, Merrifield will be the bench guy. Let's keep moving forward. Yeah. Hyunjin Ryu, done MLB, back to Korea with the Hanwha Eagles. Yes. Hyunjin Ryu, criminally underrated in the big leagues. Sad to see him go.
I mean, listen, he is, alongside, you know, Chan Ho Park, the most successful Korean pitcher in big league history. A guy who had his career begin with the Hanwha Eagles, was amazing in Korea, and now he gets to go back there, which is very cool. Kind of reminiscent to Shin Soo-Chu going back and playing in the KBO, although in this case, you know, he had already pitched, or he had already, you know, pitched for Hanwha, where the Chu had not actually played in the KBO before the end of his career. So he's super fun to watch. I thought he could have helped the big league team. Honestly, it feels like when Tanaka went back to Japan, it was like, this dude's still good. Like, I don't know why he still isn't a, you know, a four starter for some major league team, but I'm sure it'll be very cool to see him back in the KBO. But one more before we say goodbye, or before we say goodbye, before we take a break, Jake, who's not signed, is Joseph Daniel Votto. Joey Votto is the freest of agents. And the way that I know this is because he's posting Instagram stories regularly, basically being like, this is ridiculous. How am I not signed? In a very Joey Votto way. Basically posting videos of him doing random everyday activities and being like, this isn't spring training. What the heck? He posts one yesterday threatening to not put his shopping carts back in the shopping cart corral if nobody signs him soon, which is very Joey Votto and amazing. But I think we should acknowledge this one. Again, there's plenty of other free agents out there, and that's the problem, is that the reality of the situation is, as long as the super duper top guys are still out there, I feel like Joey's just going to kind of get pushed aside. There's a couple other guys like this where he just cannot possibly be a priority for teams right now. Obviously, as a 40-year-old DH who maybe is only competent against right-handed pitching, that's a limited skill set. But I will say I am actually surprised that he hasn't found a deal yet. And I hope that again, people are being pretty dramatic saying this is, you know, a shame on society that he hasn't signed yet. And yeah, obviously I agree to some degree, but, I'm really curious how this goes, because having been around Joey last year, like it's very simple. He wants to play. He really, really wants to play. He believes that he, if healthy, he can still help a big league team. I do believe that. But I am curious where this goes, because the farther we get into spring training, I do wonder if he doesn't really get his wish, and that would really bum me out.
You never want to root for injuries, but we need a couple to get Joey Votto on a team.
Yeah, I think that is probably the best way to put it. So we hope Joey finds a spot in the near future. All right, Jake, let us take a break. And when we return, we're going to hit three big extensions that happened, because they're pretty important. We'll be right back here on Baseball Barbcast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Let's talk about some extensions before we open up a can of goofy. Jose Altuve, Bobby Witt Jr., and Mitch Keller are the three big ones we got to talk about. Let's start with Altuve. No introduction needed. He stays an Astro. Astro for life, 5 more years, $125 more million dollars through 2029, which will be his age 39 season. We were coming into this year with both Altuve and Bregman as impending free agents, and it felt like the Astros were going to have to pick one of them. Signing Altuve to an extension does not necessarily mean Bregman's gone. It does smell like they have maybe picked him over Bregman, though.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that they prioritize him, and it's not that Alex Bregman doesn't mean a lot to Houston as well. He's obviously homegrown in a very similar way. And by the way, it's not like they have an obvious Alex Bregman replacement. You know, it's not like, okay, now it's time to kind of turn the page. Like, Alex Bregman's still one of the best players in baseball, and we are still going to be talking about him, you know, moving forward.
Jordan, they don't really have a replacement for anything. That's a longer conversation, is that the Astros organization over the last couple of years has tailed off their below the surface. Things are not exactly at their healthiest, but we can talk about that at another time. Altuve, legend, future Hall of Famer, Boris through John Heyman, tweeting that Altuve is the first third baseman in baseball history to reach the 300. Thank you. The first second baseman to reach the $300 million mark. That's pretty cool. Second baseman usually don't get paid that much. So congrats to Scott and Jose and John. A tweet from Chandler Rome I liked, which was from Altuve. When I got called up in 2011, they told me it was something temporary until they found another second baseman. They still don't have another second baseman. The Altuve story is badass. I'm glad he gets his money. He has, in my mind, emerged from the Astros can-banging scandal about as well as he could have. I like Jose Altuve, and I'm not sorry about it. Bobby Witt Jr. Bobby Witt Jr. This is the big one, okay? 11 years, $288.78 million. I love the .78 because that's $780,000, okay? $780,000. That is the guaranteed money. It can max out with options and escalators, et cetera, to $377 million over 14 years. The Royals keep the face of their franchise in town until we all turn to dust.
Yeah, and this is essentially the Julio contract, except for Bobby Witt Jr., except they're doing it after Bobby Witt had, you know, an even more substantial breakout. I mean, this is the kind of thing that had they gone to him a year ago, they probably could have saved $100 million. But instead, and maybe they did. Maybe we don't know. It's possible that Witt already turned something down. Like, I don't know. So maybe that's unfair to Kansas City. But credit to them. Credit to John Sherman. Credit to this ownership. Credit to this front office. Credit to Bobby Witt Jr. for saying, this is the place where I want to bring this franchise out from a very, very dark period. I am that good. I can break through and kind of be a singular talent that is the face of this franchise. Because listen, you could say, oh, what's the big deal? He still had 4 years until free agency. When a player is this good and in a small market in any sport, and this is much bigger issue in the NBA, obviously, but you know it's going to be like, okay, like it's Bobby Witt. Like there's no way they're going to keep him. And by the way, sorry to say this, Jake, we're going to hear this about the Orioles guys already, right? Like this is already a thing that we're saying about Adley and we're going to say about Gunnar and whatever. And hopefully new Orioles ownership can recognize that and have a similar reaction. But for this, when it's so obvious, you know, when you have the shortstop, when you have a power speed dynamo like Bobby Witt Jr., who has already shown how quickly he can improve, you know, defensively and with every part of his game, he can absolutely be one of the best players in baseball. And I'm just thrilled for Royals fans. I think that no matter how this kind of interesting offseason of spending goes for them this year, they know they have their guy, and I'm excited that he'll be there.
Anytime a player signs an extension and we can have fewer tweets underneath player highlights that say future Yankee,
it's
a good thing.
It's a huge win for all of us. So congratulations to the Royals fans for not having to deal with that. And by the way, it is cool that, you know, him and Pat Mahomes will both be just balling out in Kansas City for the next decade plus. Might be a while before Bobby Witt's winning quite as much. But Kansas City's cool. How about that? I know a part of this, too, is there's a lot of going on with, you know, the new stadium. You're looking for public funding. That's certainly a more complicated issue that is probably not entirely unrelated. But the simple fact is Bobby Witt, I knowing it with Julio as a Mariners fan, it is the most comforting thing in the world to just be like, yeah, he's just going to be my favorite team forever. That is an incredibly cool feeling. And I'm glad Royals fans have that, too.
I will take the under, though, on Bobby Witt rings three. I'll take the under on three. Mahomes is at three. I'll take the under on that. Thing I want to point out is you make, the notion that the Royals wasted or could have saved $100 million if they had signed this last winter. It's a great lesson to all you kids out there. Don't procrastinate. You could lose $100 million.
It's really that simple. It is really that simple. Another team that probably could have saved some money if they did this extension a year ago is the Pittsburgh Pirates. Not that the Pittsburgh Pirates need to be saving any more money than they already are, but they shell out a nice chunk of change for right-handed pitcher Mitch Keller, who really broke through in 2023. He's one of their top prospects for a while. He kind of took his lumps and then really found another gear with them in 2023. They give him a five-year, $77 million extension, buying out three free agent years. Of course, he could still hit free agency, you know, entering his age 33 season, so it's not like he's necessarily a Pirate for life. Still a contract that they could probably trade if they want to keep being cheap. But let's stay positive here. Mitch Keller, another guy who clearly has embraced being, you know, one of these young success stories unfortunately relatively rare success stories, you know, on the mound for the Pirates recently, and hopefully he will stay there through the duration of this contract. Unlike guys, you know, like Gerrit Cole, like Tyler Glasnow, and beyond. So we love Mitch Keller. I mean, his development story is really special. You know, kid from Cedar Rapids, who really kind of took time to kind of establish himself in the big leagues. But he's really good. He's really, really, really good. And if the Pirates are going to have any chance moving forward, he's going to be a huge part of that.
So I'm looking at real estate right now in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, on unidentified internet real estate website. And 77 million can go quite a long way.
You can
buy a 223 acre lot of farmland
just outside of town
for 7.5 mil. So Mitch Keller, if you're looking to farm some crops on the side, my dog,
I don't know
there's
where,
some options for you.
As far as like, you know, Midwest boys, I don't know where Mitch Keller falls on the, you know, hunting, farming, baseball player spectrum. I'm honestly not sure, but I do know that at the very least he can get himself a nice home on, you know, in the North Hills. Pittsburgh's got some nice neighborhoods, and I'm sure he will be living quite well.
With $77 million, Mitch Keller will be just chilling in Cedar Rapids.
Wow, what a throwback. Let us now move on to a couple other fun topics. Let's skip. Listen, we weren't going to lead with it, but we have to do a little bit of a uniform update, a pants update, if you will, although this is less about the pants and more about the letters. When we returned on Monday, we, of course, talked about the new baseball uniforms that everybody's really pissed about. Of course, we talked about the see-through pants, and we talked about the letters on the jerseys, which are smaller and just don't look quite as good. But we
hard
also
to read.
Mentioned
they're hard to read.
Hard to read.
They're hard to read.
They just don't look great. But we also mentioned on Monday that one team in particular, the Kansas City Royals, seemed to have decided, you know what, we're actually not going to do that. In their first spring training game, we saw Cole Reagans pitching, and that R-A-G-A-N-S just looked enormous. It was huge. It was the biggest nameplate we've ever seen in Major League Baseball.
See it from space, like the Great Wall of China.
And we were like, okay, is this – what is going on here? This is clearly not the lettering that the rest of the league is using. And it turns out, thanks to some wonderful reporting from Paul Lucas at UniWatch, who, if anyone's going to do this, it's going to be Paul, who straight up asked the Royals and was like, hey, what's going on?
And hey, guys, like, them letters big.
They're like, we're not crazy, right? Like, those letters are still pretty
those
big.
Those are bigger, right?
And apparently the Royals were like, yeah, they are, because we told MLB it is really important for us to have letters that I guess better reflect, you know, the spirit of the Kansas City Royals uniform. And apparently Major League Baseball was like, okay, fine. So apparently, thanks to some hard lobbying, the Royals are just going to forge ahead with this, which isn't kind of an amazing. First of all, hell yeah, Royals. I guess like you don't know if you can't ask, right? Maybe all these other teams are just haven't even asked nicely or lobbied hard. But I'm just fascinated as to what kind of precedent this sets, maybe for the better, that now it's be like, why can't we have this? Why can't we? And I just don't know where this is going to lead. I'm very fascinated as to what the next step is in this saga. By the way, I saw the Padres were also just wearing last year's pants. Like, some teams are just deciding, like, screw it, we're just going to wear the old pants. So this story is not over, but we have to give our hat tip to the Kansas City Royals for saying, no, our letters need to stay large and in charge.
Thick pants and big letters. The baseball season has returned. Good time to remind everybody that there are new City Connects coming this year. MLB launched this initiative a couple years ago. Fun uniforms for teams. We now have two clubs remaining that will not have City Connect uniforms, and they are predictably the A's, the Oakland A's, who are leaving. They are quite literally city, unconnected.
City disconnecting. Yes.
City disconnecting.
Yes.
They should just get uniforms at, say, Las Vegas at this point. And of course, the New York Yankees, who changing anything about their uniform is an affront to humanity and democracy.
Unless...
I don't think Go ahead. Unless it's an advertisement on the sleeve.
No. I was going to say, unless it's making the road jerseys make it look like Mickey when Mickey Mantle wore them, because we know that they are changing them to that. But the Yankees holding on to this, which, by the way, it is also a reminder that the Yankees are probably sitting there like, ha, 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 look at us. We don't have names on our jerseys. We don't have to deal with the small letters. All you little, you know, small town franchises having to deal with your crappy little letters. Not our problem, because it's not about the name on the back, Jake. It's about the NY on the front. It's about these pinstripes, which you have to earn. It's anyway, okay, that's the Yankees. But they will never have City Connects, I'm confident. It's the same reason they are never going to have Fan Fest, because they don't need to, because they have so many fans everywhere and they don't need to, you know, even bother organizing such a thing.
The Yankees, the Yankees should tease City Connects and say, like, City Connects dropping on this date, and then just tweet a picture of the same uniforms they've worn for 100 and whatever years. We're never changing, baby.
That said, to the point about them not having a fan fest, this is also a time to mention the A's held a fan fest. The A's fans, not the A's, very much not the A's, held a fan fest in Oakland over the past week. And it was just so awesome. Mayor Sheng Tao was there. She was wearing, I believe, an Oakland Bees hat. I know that we're going to have a team, I believe an indie ball team, the Oakland Bees, that are going to be playing still in Oakland, in the Oakland area. I just love A's fans so much. And it is a reminder that while they are still playing in Oakland this year, we are going to hear these fans have their voice heard. And let us just say, this saga is also not over. This stuff in Las Vegas is a mess. Do I think they will probably still end up there somehow? Yes. But man, is it getting ugly and ugly and ugly and more embarrassing by the day. And I am just glad that the Oakland fans continue to have their voice heard, because they are some of the best fans in baseball, without a doubt. And I hope that they can continue to show that. So shouts out to those A's faithful.
From one disorganized organization to another, let's talk about the Washington Nationals sign.
Let's do it. Okay, so. The Washington Nationals have been in a deep rebuild since trading away Juan Soto on purpose. Some of those fruits have begun to we've started to see them. All right. A nice little day from James Wood. We were seeing, you know, Dylan Cruz is looking pretty good. Mackenzie Gore, whatever. Okay. There's some reasons to be optimistic. CJ Abrams, whatever. However, the leadership in this organization, Mike Rizzo, Davey Martinez, of course, still there since they won the World Series in 2019. They are one of the few organizations who at least publicly have decided to stay as old school as it gets. And the latest chapter in this story is Mike Rizzo at a off-season, kind of like a pre-spring training season ticket holder event, was on stage with Davey Martinez talking about, you know, what is going to be emphasized as the Nationals try to improve on the mound, something that is important. Mike Rizzo was talking about the importance of throwing strikes, which is true.
Oh, he's true.
But what he ended up saying, which ended up just being an all-time zinger, was he said, "I don't care how hard you throw ball four." Now, this, a line delivered in front of a live audience that people could be like, ha, 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 it's true. We don't care about how, it's not about velocity and chasing, you know, 100 miles an hour. It's about throwing strikes. It's true. He's right. That's fine. That's a fair sentiment. However, to take it to the level of putting a sign that says your own quote behind the bullpen, looming over the catcher's shoulder that every pitcher has to look at during their spring training bullpens to not throw ball four in bullpens, very strange. I don't care how hard you throw ball four, is worthy, by the way, with that sign next to all the Edgetronic cameras and Rapsodo equipment, is objectively hilarious. And we have to talk about this. Jake, I know you have asked a lot of people around the game about this. Why is this funny? Why is this worthy of scorn? Why is this also worthy of, you know, I think worthy discussion about why this is, you know, part of the pitching development discourse and as it relates to a team like the Washington Nationals?
In coaching, let's start there. In coaching, negative cues are generally bad. If I tell you, don't throw a ball, you are then thinking about a ball. If I say, don't think about the Roman Empire, okay, now you're thinking about the Roman Empire. If I say, don't think about Mark Grzelanek, what's in your head?
Okay. Damn it.
What early 2000 second baseman is in your head? Okay, it's the one I just said. And so if you're on the mound and you see a sign that says, don't throw ball four, you're not exactly going to be pinpoint command. And it is indicative that the Nationals organization, from a player development standpoint, not from a player acquisition standpoint, from a player development standpoint, is behind the times. That has been reported out by various members of the Washington Post over the years. I think that there are people within the Nationals organization who are more open-minded and progressive and technologically savvy than leadership. I think that Mike Rizzo saying this in public is not a problem. Conveying this sentiment to fans is funny. Conveying this sentiment to players is way less than ideal, and I think detrimental. Look, it's the Nationals are not going to win the division this year, and it will not be because of these signs. Okay, these signs are not going to help or hurt the rebuild. However, it is indicative of a larger issue at play within the Nationals apparatus, I believe.
Yes.
If these signs were at Dodger camp or Mariners camp or Guardians camp or an organization that has shown an ability to develop pitching, I would think it's funny. But because the Nationals put it up, I'm worried.
Yeah, but again, I think it's important to note that the Nationals, they have shown signs. Again, have we seen it succeed at the big league level yet? No. They've made a lot of hires in their front office. They've turned over a lot of their player development staff. And so I do believe that there's parts that are heading in the right direction, and that's good. However, what is so funny about this is that Mike Rizzo can't help himself, right? He knows that he's still in charge, and he still wants to make sure that kind of his view of stop chasing this, like we got to throw strikes, which that's where it comes back to the player acquisition part, which is it is objectively funny that this is also a team that has targeted guys that throw really hard that don't throw a lot of strikes. And so the inconsistency and, you know, I won't call it hypocrisy, but it's just like the mixed messages. And I think that that is going to be the most important part. If you really want to take this seriously, the most important part about the Nationals moving forward is how does Mike Rizzo's leadership and his vision for what is important mesh with a lot of the new hires that they've made at the player development level? Because ultimately, while they have collected a lot of really excited young hitters, and I do think that in some ways they have still had an eye for real high talent, they're going to have to get outs, and they're going to have to find ways to get outs that isn't necessarily just getting guys that were top prospects or that throw hard that have good stuff. It's so much more than that if you're going to succeed in the major leagues. And that is what we're going to have to see is at the major league level is that guys are getting better and that guys are finding ways to improve. And that's the part that I think we don't know yet, right? We have to see that. That's the where we can hold the Nationals accountable moving forward. But for now, we can just laugh at the sign because it is funny.
I will say that people around baseball are very much laughing at the sign. I had someone with another organization, an organization that is good at pitching development, say to me, we want to make shirts that say, we care how hard you throw ball for. look at fastball. I think there was a really good article on Fangraphs about this.
Yes.
By Davey Andrews that was basically like, here is how hitters perform in three ball counts, depending on velocity.
Exactly.
As is the case, the harder the pitch is, the worse hitters are against it. So throwing ball four, or at least the pitch on a three ball count, does indeed matter. Let's move on. Spring training games have started. Spring training games are 99% irrelevant. Okay. However, okay, so let me just say, why are they mostly irrelevant? Hitters are just trying to ease their way back into it. Guys are not trying to win. That's a big one. And they're only playing a couple innings. It's not really a results-based thing. Where does spring training matter? Spring training, in my mind, matters with pitch shapes, pitch velocity, new pitches, injuries, mechanical changes, and then young players facing competition they've never seen before. And can they do this at all? And we've gotten a couple interesting tidbits so far, and we'll fly through them here. Carlos Rodon, who was really bad a year ago in his first year with the Yankees, has added a cutter. He threw five of them in his first outing the other day of the spring. One of them was a home run. Results don't really matter. I wrote at Yahoo about whether or not Rodon adding a cutter is going to be helpful. Dug into, you know, Rodon's numbers from last year. I think the cutter will be helpful. It's not going to be the be-all, end-all. He just needs to kind of be more deceptive with his fastball, was kind of my conclusion.
Yeah. And I would just say, again, this is an overarching thing. I totally agree with your assessment of like what we should care about in spring training, because this is why the results don't matter, because the pitchers are explicitly, not only are they building up, they are explicitly working on things. They are not trying to get outs. They are not reading a scouting report for the double A guy that they've never seen before to make sure that they get him out. That's just not their focus, right? They're trying to see where, but that doesn't mean that we cannot look at their stuff and the kinds of pitches that they're throwing and say, okay, that is different. So that is where we can care.
Spencer Strider showing a curveball,
yep,
a pitch, mm-hmm, that I don't think he threw at all last year. Mm-hmm. That is very, very relevant. Could be important. Now, Rodon might scrap the cutter before opening day.
Yeah,
and this might not matter at all.
Plenty of times, right? Guys trying out pitches and then they don't actually use them. But that's in terms of assessing pitchers, I think that is the only way we should really focus on things.
Speaking about assessing pitchers, Alek Manoah, who is one of the few pitchers in baseball that was had a worse year than Carlos Rodon in 2023.
True.
He did not look good in his first spring training outing yesterday. I believe he hit three batters in the first inning, looked out of sorts. It's very early. We, as a podcast, are rooting for Alek Manoah. I this is a pro Alek Manoah forum.
Yeah.
Not an encouraging first outing.
I agree, but I believe he led the league in hit by pitches when he was good. So the plunkings by themselves are not concerning. For him, again, it's going to be about the velocity and generally
command.
So
Jordan, I would say three hit by pitches inning is concerning.
I'm not.
Trust me. That was my college career. Was that?
I don't mean to sugarcoat it too much, but I just wanted to say that he is someone we've seen. You know, if Shane Bieber started plunking guys left and right, I'd be like, what in the world is wrong with him? So that's a little bit different. But anyway, no, Manoah is one. And now, again, some guys are him and Rodon are guys who have huge spotlights on them, right? That's the other reality and kind of dumb part and unfair part about spring training is that the best pitchers, when they get rocked, nobody cares, right? Nobody cares whatsoever. They're like, oh, it's fine. He's working on stuff. But if you're Manoah and Rodon, we're watching a lot closer. Some of that's fair and some of that is not.
The one other spring training thing, Tamar Johnson, top hitting prospect with the Pittsburgh Pirates, number 4 overall pick in the 2022 draft, went yard twice yesterday against the Blue Jays, one on a high fastball on an 0-2 count, the other against a left-on-left slider, both very impressive. He was fine last year, didn't quite show the ceiling that he had as an amateur, but boy, oh boy, reason to get excited because he looks good.
Yeah, I mean, I've been the highest on Tamar since he was an amateur. I don't know, man. I mean, he was 19. Like, it was a slow start. Obviously, the power was going to be suppressed in the Florida State League. He finished the year with an 860 OPS in A-ball. He walked 101 times. I mean, this is a very unique offensive profile where he has this power, but he's obviously a smaller guy, second baseman. Just an incredibly fun hitter to watch.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to necessarily impact the Pirates this year, but I still am pretty optimistic about him being a big part of their future.
Torey Lovello story. Educate yes. me. You just put this on the doc. I haven't watched this.
Okay. Yet. This is a callback to one of our favorite moments of last postseason. Basically, Torey Lovello spoke after the Rangers and D-backs played in spring training. And he told a story about Blaze Alexander, one of their prospects, who kind of came up to him before the game. And he was like, hey, like World Series rematch, like, this is like a big deal. And Lovello kind of talked about how he was like, you know what? I didn't really think about that. And yeah, it's spring training. Okay, whatever. But Lovello, in telling the story, said something that made my ears perk up a little bit. And he is recalling how he felt when the D-backs lost the World Series. And he said, to quote him, he said, yeah, you know, I thought back and I remembered that the last time, you know, we faced these guys, they beat us to advance. And I heard him say they beat us to advance, and I was immediately ripped back to our favorite quote of the 2023 season. That was Evan Carter in the minutes after winning the World Series saying the words, "Job's not finished." And when I heard Torey Lovello said that the Rangers beat them to advance, I thought, Torey, do you think there was another round? Like, that was it, my guy. Do you think that the Rangers advance to what? Advance to the parade?
There's no Club World Cup in baseball.
As we referred to it when we talked about Evan Carter, the Intergalactic Series. I don't know when or where that is played and between who, but I just had to bring it up because I will never stop laughing at Evan Carter saying job's not finished after winning the World Series. So yeah, anyway, thank you, Torrey Lovello, for continuing that lore.
You don't get to play the LG Twins for the World Series.
You should,
okay?
You should.
You should, though. Right. Last thing before we get out of here, Jordan, I just have a quick little story.
Please.
For those of you who listen to the podcast, you know I coach a lot of youth baseball. Okay, I'm on the board of Harlem Little League here in New York. I spend a lot of my free time hitting fungos and coaching the game. I enjoy it quite a bit. We are doing assessments for Harlem Little League right now for the upcoming season. They're not tryouts, Jordan. Everyone gets to be on a team, but we do assessments so that we can know kind of how good players are so we can make the teams fair, right?
That seems like a reasonable way to handle that.
I had a kid show up yesterday, 7-year-old, with a baseball glove. First time playing baseball. And this kid threw right-handed, was a right-handed player, and had the glove on his right hand.
Very normal for seven. First time playing baseball.
Right. And I said, that actually goes on the other hand. And he said, no, it doesn't. And I said, no, it does. He goes, I don't believe you. You're wrong.
Hell yeah.
And I was...
Fight the power.
I was like, okay. Now, Jordan, what would you do in this situation if you're me?
So my first question...
This went on for a while. Like, this child was refusing to put the glove on the correct hand.
Yes. Well, but my first question is, was it actually a righty glove? Like, it was supposed to be on his left hand. Like, you understand what I'm asking? Like,
yes.
Was it actually? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So he was basically trying to put his right hand into a left-handed glove.
He was doing like a Jim Abbott situation where like he was taking the glove. He would like try and catch the ball, take it off, and then throw with his right hand and then put the glove back on like the incorrect hand. Should I just let this kid cook?
So he won. Like, you didn't get him to change it.
I had a conversation with his parents at the end of the day to be like, just so you know, like, it goes on this hand.
Right. And they probably were like, yeah, no, we know.
Like,
now,
yeah,
my question
tell him.
Is, how is his throwing?
He's a right-handed thrower.
Okay, but did he feel that? Like, to me, the moment when I'm seven and I realize, like, damn, Coach Jake's probably right about this is when I start trying to throw left-handed.
Correct. But this kid was throwing right-handed. He was throwing right-handed, and he made a great point to me, which was, shouldn't it go on my stronger hand? Shouldn't the glove go on my stronger hand?
Yes.
Which is intuitive. If my right hand is better, I should catch and throw it.
No, 100%. When you're seven, like, again, this is a moment that happens with most people playing baseball for the first time. So I don't blame this kid whatsoever. But storyline to watch, sounds like.
Yeah, keep an eye on this kid.
Okay. Big spring storyline. Okay.
If I see him during the season, you know, just throwing and catching with the right hand, I'll let everybody know.
Or this is like a superhero origin story, like Billy Wagner. You know, he broke his right hand or whatever, and then it's like, all right, I guess I'll throw lefty, and then this, you know, kid becomes one of the greatest left hand pickers of all time. That's what I'm rooting for. But I am not super optimistic about that. So we'll see, though. Thank you for sharing, and we'll definitely check back in.
We'll see how good of a coach I really am. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of Baseball Barbacast. Remember, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That is BARBcast. Subscribe on YouTube.
Yes.
Yahoo Sports on YouTube. You can watch us on YouTube. To all the people on YouTube.
Yes. Hello. Hello. We're saying goodbye. Again, leave us some comments on the YouTube. Again, you can subscribe. We've got a whole playlist on the Yahoo Sports channel. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Thank you.
I said that.
Good. I'm glad. And I'm reminding people that email is still alive and well. Thank you to Brett Rader for producing this episode of Baseball Barbacast. And we will be back on Friday because we get to do this podcast 3 times a week. Thank you all for listening. And we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.
Remember, the glove goes on the other hand.
Goes on your foot.